Blog Talk Radio.
Economic justice and mindful consumerism. And when it comes to consumerism, the whole idea of consumerism is something that we have all been raised with, thoroughly indoctrinated into, and we naturally assume that the whole world of consumer-driven economics is the way things have been for all time. But actually, when we look at it, our world of having a consumer-driven economy is really only about 100 years old. And it may seem strange, but to people living in the 19th century, you know, their main driving force wasn't going out to a Black Friday sale at a local retailer. You know, their whole life revolved around maintaining the family, maintaining their land, working on the farm, or working in whatever industry they happen to work in, and looking after their family, looking after their community, looking after their society. And then if they had time to go shopping for a new dress, or at least a flower sack that they could turn into a new dress, you know, they'd go out and do it. But their whole world, back about 100 years ago, 120 years ago, didn't really revolve around a consumer-driven economy as it does today. You know, they were more concerned with more simple matters, more direct matters of, you know, is my community healthy? You know, is my family being looked after? Am I looking after my family properly? Do we have enough resources, not only so that my family can survive, but so that my community can also survive? And back in those days, if a family fell upon hard times and didn't have enough, you know, people didn't sit back and say, oh, well, it's your fault, you didn't work hard enough. You know, family worked to help other families. And individuals and family groups within a community all pulled together for the overall health and safety and security of that community. And over the last 100, 120 years of the growth of industrialism and consumerism and the whole drive of a consumer-based economy, we've lost a lot of that. I mean, we haven't lost it in total, but we have lost a lot of that awareness. You know, right now, a lot of us are just wrapped into our own little worlds, our own little needs. May have your own Walkman, radio, or whatever, video games. We may spend hours and hours on the internet, you know, looking at sites like Facebook, shopping sites, eBay, Twitter accounts, whatnot. We can spend hours and hours a day on the internet, working in cyberspace and interacting with a name on a screen. And in the meantime, Our next door neighbor may be on hard times or may even have died, and we're not aware of it. I mean, that's how strange, I guess you could say, our world has become. And it is a different world today. And is it necessarily a better world? And to start off, I'd like to get into a little discussion about mindless consumerism as opposed to mindful consumerism. Mindful consumerism is a little bit about what I was talking about life 100, 120 years ago, where people knew each other, where you didn't just walk into a store and you were waited on by somebody that might be their first day on the job, somebody that you didn't know from Adam. I mean, you were shopping from folks that you knew. You knew who they were. You knew the family they came from. You knew what country they came from, if they came from one of the old countries like, you know, Germany or England or Sweden. And you knew about their family background. When you went out shopping for your food, you know, a lot of times you'd be shopping from local farmers or, you know, people that were getting their supplies from local farmers. You knew who was growing your food. You knew how they were growing the food. You knew how they were treating their hired hands, how they were treating their livestock, their farming practices. I mean, back in that time, it was neighbor buying from neighbor, people supporting the people in their local communities. And today now, with our consumer-driven economy, which is global, I mean, we don't know the local farmers that are producing the food that's on our table anymore. The apples that we have, 9 times out of 10, they're not raised locally, unless you buy from a local orchard still. But a lot of times these apples could be grown in Argentina, you know, or South Africa. Gosh. And our food quality has gone down tremendously. I mean, I was just sitting here remembering the last time I bought mandarin oranges. Back in the 1960s, 1970s, we called them mandarin oranges. And they came from China. That's where they got the name, mandarin oranges. They were a delicacy, so we only bought them about once a year, around Christmas time or Thanksgiving. And those little guys were sweet. You could peel them, you could eat them. They were sweet as can be. Nowadays, they call them clementines or sweeties. And you buy them, you can buy them year-round. They're still kind of expensive, but they're available year-round. And they're grown in South Africa. Sometimes they're grown in South America. And the quality has gone down because they're mass-producing these little buggers. They're not allowed to ripen on the tree anymore. They're picked green, put in carts, shipped overseas, and by the time they get to your store where you pick them out, they're relatively ripe. I mean, they look ripe, but you bite into one, they're not sweet, at least not the ones I've been getting for the last 5 or 6 years. They're sour as can be, and they're not the clementines, I mean, the mandarin oranges that we used to get. You know, these are just what I would say, an inferior product that still looks similar to what I used to buy in the 1970s. But taste-wise, it's a whole different product because the whole focus is no longer on growing a sweet, quality product using good, wholesome ingredients, you know, like fertile soil, clean water, and allowing them to more or less ripen on the vine. No, now they're trying to force the crop. Now what they're doing is they're picking them all green, and then they're trying to use chemicals on the soil and chemical fertilizer to get that tree to produce another crop, and then another crop, and then another crop. And the whole focus isn't on growing good, wholesome food. The whole emphasis is on putting out a product that people will buy and buy and buy. And to do that, they can no longer rely on the quality of the product to sell the product. You know, what they do is they use names like, oh, this is the Clementine, this is my darling Clementine, or this is the Sweetie. Oh, your kids will love them, they're so sweet. And then you bite into one and you find out it shouldn't be called a Sweetie. They should be called Sour Balls. But this whole consumer-driven marketing technique that these guys use, they work, because I've been buying the Clementines and the Sweeties probably about the last 6 years, knowing full good and well that when I get them to the table, they're not going to be sweet. And every once in a while, if I do run across one of those things that are sweet, I'm surprised. But, you know, I continued buying them for about 6 years, knowing good and well that this was not the same product that I used to buy, called Mandarin Oranges, that were sweet. You know, it's a different product. But something about that name, something about that drive, something about that desire to recapture that original product and to be able to find it in the store and be able to reach out and grab it and take it home like a little bit of history and eat it was just so great that my desire overcame my rational mind. And for about 6 years, I was buying stuff that I knew good darned well, you know, was sour. But instead, getting it home and expecting it somehow to be a mandarin orange. And this is just a brief introduction into mindless consumerism, that we are driven by desire for stuff that we really don't need. We're driven by our desire, thinking that this product is going to satisfy me. And then we buy it, we get it home, and for a moment or two we feel satisfied until we start using it, and then we realize our world has not been significantly changed. You know, this product isn't what I thought it was going to be, or, you know, this product just doesn't live up to the expectations that I had. And after that, we're off to try to find and buy the next big thing that's going to bring me satisfaction. And that is a brief example of mindless consumerism, where we go out and we try to get what we think we need or what we want, what we desire. And we don't mind, you know, how it gets there. We don't know who makes it necessarily. We don't see the people working in the plants in China or in somewhere else overseas. We don't see their working conditions, their labor conditions. And all we are concerned about primarily is getting what we want, getting what we want when we want it, and paying the lowest possible price for that product. And then if we can buy it in mass and in bulk and just get as much of it as we want and take it home, so much the better. Now that's mindless consumerism. Mindful consumerism is just the opposite. Mindful consumerism is we become aware of the company that we are buying our products from. We pay attention to their code of ethics. We pay attention to their mission statement. We pay attention to how they treat their employees, both their highly paid employees and their lower paid employees. We become aware of how they treat the environment. Does this company have a respect for the environment? Or is it just trying to mass produce crops for mass consumption, for for sale to the highest bidder to make a profit. Is their overall driving force to make a ton of money for the shareholders and for the CEO? And of course, we know that when you're in business to make a profit. You're in business to make money. Nobody goes into business to go broke, unless you're trying to operate an elaborate tax scheme. But people who are in business, who engage in commerce, we expect some profitable return on our investment, on our time, on our labor, on our money. But at the same time, a mindful businessman and a mindful consumer are also going to be concerned with leaving the world a better place, touching the lives of other people, helping other people to live better lives. And when we do business with corporations and multinational corporations or smaller companies or even mom-and-pop stores that may still exist in your neighborhoods, you know, we can ask ourselves the question, by engaging in business with these people, am I contributing to the happiness of other people around me and the general well-being of my society? Or are these people folks I don't want to be doing business with? Are these people actually looking out only for the bottom line, the almighty dollar, and everything else be damned? Are they willing to make too many sacrifices in order to turn a profit? Are they willing to subject their employees to abuse, either economic abuse of not paying them what they should be paying them, and not paying them what they need to survive, or physical abuse, demanding more work out of them than what they can possibly provide, taking one person and expecting them to do the work of three or four people. And it may sound weird, may sound impossible in our day and age, but I've actually seen that scenario play out in real life. And it was here in the United States, in the heartland of the United States, middle of the great state of Missouri. It was only about 5 or 6 years ago. So a mindful consumer is one that becomes familiar, intimately aware, we might say, of the people that he or she does business with and the corporations that he and she does business with. It's not just running into the grocery store or to Walmart or whatever and just grabbing the cheapest thing on the shelf, throwing it in your cart, and then running to the checkout, getting into your car with your groceries and going back home. No, it's a lot more than that. It involves doing research, it involves asking questions, and it involves doing a little bit of soul searching. You know, by buying this product, by shopping at this place, am I really doing the right thing? That's mindful consumerism. Mindless consumerism is just grabbing what you want, paying as little as you possibly can for it, and to hell with any consequences. I'm going to pause here and play a song, Just Be True to Yourself by Celtic Reggae Revolution.
Be true to yourself. You just have to be you. Who are you? Who are you? Who are you? Who are you? Who are you?
Bang. my own speed. I ain't got no point to prove.
Price at that time was $1.25, something like that, for a string of 100 lights. And he looked at that and he marveled at that for a moment or two. And he began to think things out in his mind. And he was thinking these things out loud, so I knew exactly where he was going with his thought process. And he looked at that string of 100 lights available for $1.25, and he said, how can they afford to produce this stuff and sell them that cheap? And they flipped the box over, and he read, oh, it's made in China. And then he continued his thought process on. He said, yes, these things are made by some poor woman working her fingers to the bone, all for a few pennies a day. And the emperor, well, he doesn't mind as long as he gets his penny per packet. And I guess that's how they can afford to sell these things for that low. In essence, what he was telling me, and I knew it was true in my own heart, is that these cheap, low prices were made possible by buying from manufacturers who, in essence, used slave labor or poorly paid labor to produce the product. These products were made in factories and plants that had very little concern for human rights, very little concern for the good well-being of their employees, their workers, very little concern for environmental controls and environmental protections. That's why a lot of our manufacturing jobs have gone over to China, and why a lot of the world's pollution, not just the products, but a lot of the world's pollution is now manufactured in China. And that's been coming out in our press recently. But this man, who came in just wanting to buy a few replacement light bulbs for his Christmas lights, his string of Christmas lights, got me thinking about our entire consumer-driven economy. And just by looking and stating the obvious, how can they afford to produce this kind of product for such a low, low price? Who is being sacrificed in this transaction? And he looked at me. He thanked me for my time. He put the string of Christmas lights that I gave him back on the shelf, and he turned and he walked away. Went off to another store. I don't know if he ever found his replacement lights. He may have gone on the internet and found a place where he could buy them so he could avoid buying a whole new string of lights just to keep a single string in service for a few more years. But he made me think, what is the price that most of us pay or ask other people to pay on our behalf simply so we can walk into a store and buy up stuff dirt cheap? Who gets hurt in this process? And that is the art of mindful consumerism, or as Bernie Clark, a Buddhist teacher who gave a talk in British Columbia, Canada, calls it, mindful buying. And he has a mindfulness teaching that I'm going to quote now word for word on mindful buying. And he defines it as this: aware of the damage and suffering caused by unmindful consumption, I resolve to be aware of how what I purchase or consume affects people, animals, plants, and my planet. Now there, in order to practice mindful consumerism, we see that the average person has to do a lot of work and a lot of research. It's not just going in and buying the cheapest thing on the shelf. What this involves is going into the store and looking around and listening. Use your eyes and use your ears. Are the employees happy in that store? And I don't mean are they happy just to have a job and just to be able to afford gas that they can put in their car so they can drive to work each and every day. But are they happy? You know, are they satisfied? Do they find their work enjoyable? Do they find their work enriching? Or are they just putting in their time, slaving away in order to just get a paycheck and just go home and get some sleep and start the whole process over again? Are the employees being treated well and fairly by the employer? Are they making a just wage? Or are they making just enough to survive on? And are they being given the hours that they want? You know, most of us think that if you want a full-time job in today's society, you should be able to go out there and find a full-time job, get 40 hours a week, you know, work at a job that you can do and you can do well and be happy with, and that should be a basic human right. But when you go out job hunting these days, a lot of times you find out that these stores, these corporations, want to part-time you to death. You know, they want to give you, I don't know, maybe 20 hours a week, maybe less than that. You know, when I was job hunting about 8 years ago, I was looking for full-time employment. I made it clear I wanted full-time employment. They asked me if I would consider part-time employment. I said, well, maybe, but only if it would work out into full-time employment. And when I landed this one job with the world's largest retailer. You know, my first week, it was during Christmas. I thought, well, heck, I'll be putting in a lot of overtime, be getting a lot of extra hours. I thought, yeah, they start me at part-time. Heck, I'll probably be asked to stay and work and be getting 50 hours a week, maybe more. My first week, I was putting in about 20, 25 hours during Christmas season. It was a busy time. It was a very busy store. And I made it clear to the boss and then to the main corporate people that I was wanting full-time. And still, it was only, 20, 25 hours a week. And I'd be asked to stay over by one supervisor that needed me to stay to take over somebody else's spot that was either late or had called in sick. And I would do that gladly. And then I was told by another supervisor later that, hey, Ralph, what's going on here? You're putting in too many hours. And here I was, instead of 20 hours a week, I was putting in 25 hours a week. And for that boss, for that supervisor, that was too many hours. And can a person who is making $7.10 an hour traveling 60 miles one way to report into work, is a person like that able to survive on 20 hours a week without going into debt? No. And I went back, I made this clear, I came in wanting full-time, I took part-time, and I still wanted full-time, and they finally they recognized I was a good worker, they gave me full-time. And even at full-time hours, with the wages that they were paying, compared to the work that they were demanding, it was hard to make ends meet. And I don't mind saying I would go in there able to outwork anybody half my age and had a strong, strong work ethic. And that work ethic was rewarded by the supervisors expecting me to do twice the work that I had been doing originally. and all for the same wage or maybe 10, 15 cents an hour increased. And that is not mindful business. It's not being mindful in your business. And continuing to work for a corporation like that and doing business with a corporation like that and buying your groceries and retail products from a corporation like that, that is not being a mindful consumer. And after about 3 years, this dawned on me. It took me a while because I was still laboring under the delusion that if you worked hard for anybody and you put your enthusiasm into it, eventually you would work your way up. And after 3 years of not really working my way up, but working my way across from one manual labor job to another, even more demanding manual labor job, it finally began to dawn on me that I was not working for a mindful employer. I was not being a mindful person by continuing to work for this employer. And so I quit and began to go my own way, our own way, building up our own industry, and we've been doing well ever since. But this illustrates the need for mindfulness, mindful buying on our part, because when we think about the world and the condition that the world is in, the shape that the world is in, the injustices that we either hear about or see with our own eyes, we tend to look at these things and think, well, this is somebody else's responsibility to fix this. We expect the government to intervene when there are labor violations and safety violations on the job. We expect OSHA to come in and clean things up. And a lot of times, you know, OSHA does not come in and clean things up. They come in, they tell the main big boss, hey, you've got somebody complaining about this, that, and the other thing, and they're given a certain amount of time to fix things up, at least on a superficial level, and then when OSHA goes away, stuff goes back to normal. Stuff improves for a short period of time, but then afterwards, we go back to the same old, same old. So we think that government is going to fix these things for us. And a lot of times we are disappointed. We find out that the government doesn't fix things like we think they should. Or we may think it's a responsibility of corporations to fix things for us. When we see an injustice, that it's the responsibility of the corporation, the CEO, the board of directors, to intervene and make things right. And what we forget about is our responsibility in this whole process. It's not just the government that has the power to change things. And it's not just the corporations and the corporate giants that have the power to change things. It's the common people like you and I who have the power to change things. Only we are not aware of it. We're not taught to become aware of it. In our consumer-driven society, we are taught that if you have $5 in your wallet, you know, you should go out and you should find the cheapest possible price to pay for whatever it is that you want, regardless of whether or not you actually need it. But you should find the lowest possible price for the product that you desire and buy it. And be happy. And be happy that you've saved, you know, $5, $2, or $3 here or there. But what we're not taught is that by contributing to an economic system that is not treating other people fairly, which may be described as being unjust, by cooperating with an unjust system, we give that system power. A lot of people think that they can change the world by going out and voting for the President of the United States once every 4 years, or by going out and voting for members of Congress once every couple of years. And that's it. That's the only voice that they have in government. You can actually cast your vote each and every day for the kind of world order, the kind of economic system that you want, simply by being mindful of how you spend your money and which businesses you support. This is the power of the common person. We can think of businesses like Sears or Walmart or Kmart of old, and we can see that they've had their rise. They came up from obscurity. They built their empire, their business empire up, and they've had their rise and they've had their fall. Who gave them the power for that rise? People like you and me, the common consumer. And how did we participate in the rise of these businesses, or in the decline of these businesses? A lot of times we did not do it mindfully. We did not do it fully awares. We did it by being lured in by fancy advertising and slick slogans, thinking that we needed things that perhaps we did need, or perhaps we didn't need, things that we desired and wanted but didn't actually need. And we went into these stores and spent our hard-earned money buying these products because something about shopping there made us feel good. Or something about their advertising made us think that we needed to be shopping there so we could feel good. And a lot of times we support these companies without really thinking, is this a company that I really should be supporting? Is this a company that treats the environment in a proper way? Is this a company that focuses on green, sustainable living? Is this a company that treats its employees fairly? Is this a company that, is a vital part of the community? You know, does it invest back in the community? Or does it simply pay the CEO $20 million a year and the board of directors another outrageous sum of money and lives off of the community rather than being a part of the community? And is being a part of the community an actual part of the company's practice? Or is it just an advertising slogan that they like to use for 30, 60 seconds on their commercials, sound bites that we hear every hour or two to make us think that this is a good company to support? These companies have their rise because we vote with our pocketbooks. We voted to make this company strong by spending our dollars there. And when companies have their decline, again, we vote with our pocketbook. When I was growing up, Kmart used to be the big company, and it still survives in our small community here in Missouri. But it's taken a great big hit. You know, when Walmart came into being with its business practices and, you know, its philosophy, it changed things, and Kmart just couldn't adapt. And it couldn't survive. And it's because the people chose to support one over the other. And with some folks, they may have thought, well, you know, maybe this is a better company than what the old one was. And maybe this is the one I would like to see rule the United States and perhaps even the world. And that's why I'm going to shop there. Perhaps a few people thought that. I don't think too many actually did. The vast majority of folks were lured in by low prices, And if the employer had to get cheap with employee wages in order to provide those low, low prices and begin to ship jobs overseas by buying products from places like China rather than Indiana, then that's what they had to do in order to stay competitive and in order to keep those low, low prices low. And people voted for that economic system by shopping at that retailer. But now we have the power to turn this all around. And it all involves us asking ourselves the question, what kind of a world order do we want? What kind of an economic and social order do we want? Do we want jobs shipped overseas? If so, great. Do nothing. Continue to buy at your favorite retailer. Get that stuff that's made in China or overseas in some capacity. Don't bother reading labels. Just blindly consume. And that's the kind of world order that you are going to be creating, unawares. Or do you want a world order in which your friends and your neighbors living in your local communities have jobs, and decent jobs, at least decent jobs, perhaps even well-paying jobs? Do you want to be buying products that are made in the United States, or at least Canada, or Mexico? Or do you want to be buying products that are actually made in your local community? And the responsibility is yours to vote with your pocketbook. Go into these retailers, read where these products are made, and if they're made someplace else other than in the United States or North America or locally, if they're made someplace else, put them back on the shelf. Don't buy them. If you don't like the system that you see around you and the way that this system operates, don't buy into it. Now, if it pleases you to do this, if the world around you is exactly the way that you like it to be, exactly the way you think things should be, then buy into it. But the power, either way, is yours. You have the power to buy into it by being aware of what you are buying. We literally buy into these things. And we have the power to support, and we also have the power to withdraw our support. And I will get more into that later. I'm going to play a song here by Celtic Reggae Revolution, The United Mistakes of America. Thank you. perhaps the biggest mistake of the people of the United States of America is thinking that the power lies elsewhere, thinking that the power lies in the hands of the Congress or the President or the Supreme Court or the heads of business and corporations. But actually, we the people are the power. That's the way, if you read our Constitution, it's the way our founders set things up. You know, we the people are governed by certain sets of laws. And if these laws be just, then we the people support them. And if these laws and these economic conditions and the world situation around us, if these be unjust, then it is our duty as good citizens to push, to make change, to make peaceful, nonviolent change. And this is possible by how we conduct ourselves in our day-to-day life. When we see abuses, do we turn and look the other way? Do we ignore it, thinking, oh, I can't do anything, I'm powerless? Or do we try to do something, however small and however insignificant, do we try to do something to change things? And in the world of consumerism, when we see a corporate giant or even a small mom-and-pop store committing violations against their employees, against their community, against the environment, we can make a decision whether we are going to support that business or whether we are not going to support that business. Are we going to shop from that retailer? Or are we going to choose some other way to get the things that we need in order to survive? In order to live happy, productive lives. A lot of us are just wrapped into our own little worlds. We think, as long as I am reasonably happy, I don't really care about the guy down the street. Or I don't really care about workers halfway around the world. As long as I'm happy, reasonably happy, or perhaps even ecstatically happy, and as long as I have what I want, I'm not going to worry about anybody else. But there is a concept called interbeing that is explained by Zen teacher Thich Nhat Hanh and is also described in the Christian Bible quite nicely in the statement, whatsoever you do to the least of these, that you do to me. And how we treat people, either down the street or halfway around the world, has an effect on how we treat ourselves. If we are of the mindset that in order to have cheap consumer products, that we are going to allow people to work for slave wages, be it in our own country or halfway around the world, that's okay as long as it results in cheap prices on the things that I want to buy. If we make that decision, then we are blind to the fact that somewhere along the line, this same injustice that is being visited upon these other people, wherever they're at, this same injustice is going to have a trickle effect. It will trickle down to you and me. We used to read about sweatshops existing in other countries, third world sweatshops with abominable working conditions and terrible living conditions. And back when I was growing up, we thought that was a product of the third world, that it didn't affect us in this world, here in the United States. But over the past 40 years, I can see where that slave labor mentality has been imported from the third world into our world. Not only these days do we read and hear about terrible working conditions in other countries, we hear about accidents, workers being killed, and workers being injured and almost killed through avoidable accidents that are happening in our own world here in the United States, simply because the working conditions have gone way downhill in a lot of different industries. And I'm not going to go into that much further, but, you know, I've seen a lot of these things firsthand, where at one retailer I used to work for, numerous safety violations could be counted on a long list of paper. Merchandise was stacked in an unsafe manner. Fire exits were being blocked on a daily basis by pallets of consumer goods that were just being jammed into the back room so fast and so furiously that the management just felt that they had to just place pallets by all the emergency exits. And if we had a fire, you know, forget Bangladesh, if we had had a fire right there in Springfield, Missouri, a lot of people would have been taken out because the way things were stacked and the way things were just mismanaged, it was a disaster that was waiting to happen. And that's not something I thought I would see in the United States, being raised in suburbia. It's something I expected to see in a third world country. It's not something I expected to see here in the United States. But there has been a trickle-down effect in that regard, that the injustices that we see around the world do come back to haunt us and affect us. And we can make a choice. Do we want to continue to put up and accept economic injustice and social injustice just as a cost of doing business? Or do we want to create a world in which economic justice is what we live by? Do we want to create a world in which we try to meet the needs of others, help other people to get what they need in this life, and leave the world a better place, and then also be able to make a reasonable living in the process? What is our bottom line? If our bottom line is only about the almighty dollar and everything else is secondary, and I do mean everything else, think about it. That's a sad way to live. And I see people living this way. I used to buy into this system that as long as I was making enough money, the ends justified the means. You know, so my focus was on just making money and money alone. I could put up with a lot. And it took me a while to figure out that the price I was paying was too high, that we have to broaden our outlook. We have to expand our horizons. Our focus in this life shouldn't be about collecting a whole lot of money and a whole lot of material resources. And then in the end, when we die, if we have the most toys, we win. And then God can ask, what becomes of all this property and all these things that you collected? What becomes of it now? Whoever dies with the most toys does not win. Whoever dies with the most toys is probably, if you look at it with eyes wide open, it's probably a person who's been dead for many, many, many years before their body finally gave out. Person that hasn't truly lived. If our focus is only on material things and we neglect our social interactions with other people, and we neglect the needs of our fellow human beings and nature and other beings on this planet, then we are living a poverty life. No matter how much money we have in our bank, no matter how much material resources we have at our control, if our only concern is about material resources and we have sacrificed our family, our society, and our spirituality, then we are not rich. We are poor. Now, if we change our focus to be first and foremost on building a better world and cleaning up the messes that we have made in this world and in this life, and we focus on building a stronger, more vibrant community, a community where people don't have to go out or they don't have to feel the need to go out and rob somebody and engage in acts of violence in order to walk away with food, medicine, clothing, whatever. If we build a world in which people can actually work to attain these things in a fair and just way, then we build a stronger society and we build a better world. And it is within our power to do this. And that power is exercised through the practice of mindfulness in action and mindful consumerism. Now, in order to engage in mindful consumerism and to put any form of mindfulness in action, you have to do your work. You have to, first of all, admit that whatsoever you do to the least of these people living in this world, be they your neighbor or folks living halfway around the world, that somehow that's going to affect you, either directly or indirectly. Then you've begun to grasp the basic concept of interbeing, that how you treat other people really is an extension of how you treat yourself. And if you're treating people in an unjust way, you are actually treating yourself in an unjust way. But if you are concerned with being good to yourself, truly good to yourself, truly loving yourself, and truly participating in a just society, then your actions, how you treat other people, will reflect this. So you have to, first of all, break through the understanding or the misunderstanding of division, of separation, that actually we are not separated from one another. We are part of one another. The human race is one huge body. Some serve as the head, some serve as the feet, and the rest of us are somewhere in between. But we're all connected. And what affects one will affect the rest of the global community. And this understanding, this realization, should guide our actions on a day-to-day basis. And in order to live in a mindful way, not only do we have to set aside any illusion of separation that may still exist in our consciousness, we also have to do our homework on what is really going on around us, in the world around us. What role do businesses play in environmental issues, in social justice issues, either in community building or in being a leech on the community? And in order to know this, we have to be able to dig in, do some research, ask questions, go into a store where you're thinking about buying, and don't necessarily buy, just hang out, listen. How do do the employees treat one another? How do the employees treat the customers? Do they seem to be happy? Are they fulfilled in their work? Or are they complaining about not having enough hours? Are they complaining about not being able to support their families? Are they having to work 3 and 4 different jobs because they can't find a full-time job? And then ask yourself the question, is this the place that I want to support by shopping there? Because when you shop at any store, you are saying implicitly that I support this business model. I approve of what this retailer does. I approve of how this corporation treats the environment, treats the community, and treats its employees. So, yeah, do your research. Listen to the employees. Don't necessarily have to ask a lot of questions. Just listen. And then dig in a little bit deeper. Find out, okay, what is the pay scale? Go on websites and explore. Find out, how much money does the CEO of the corporation make? And then what is the starting wage for the worker just coming in? And what is the wage for the worker that's been there for 2 or 3 years? You know, there are folks, companies like Costco, that make no secret whatsoever about what their CEO makes. He makes about $500,000 a year. And they make no secret as to what their average employee makes after about 2 or 3 years being on the job. Anywhere from $17 to $20 an hour plus benefits. So, I mean, that's a good corporation. That's a business model that I can get behind, that I can wholeheartedly support. And Costco makes no secret of the business philosophy of the CEO, that he does not want to be stocking away, you know, millions of dollars each year in his own private bank accounts. What he wants to be able to live well, live comfortably, and for $500,000, most people can do that. But he also wants to create a business that is going to last, that is going to stand the test of time, that is going to contribute to the well-being of his employees, allow them to live comfortably and well, and also he wants to create a business that is going to support the local community and create a strong, vibrant community. In his business model, he doesn't want to be a locust that is out there devouring the forest. He wants to be a steward, taking care of that forest, tending the forest, tending the garden of humanity. And that, I can't say enough good about Costco, because that business philosophy is a very enlightened, mindful business philosophy. And mindful consumers would do well to shop at corporations, businesses like Costco. We would also do well to support local mom-and-pop businesses, because if you haven't noticed, they are going by the wayside. The big retailers have come in with their bigger buying power, their ability to move manufacturing jobs to overseas locations that pay, oh God, abysmal wages and abysmal working conditions. And they have the power to create a society, a world, in which the almighty dollar is the bottom line. And they can afford to buy things cheap and sell things cheap as well. Mom and pops don't have that same buying power. So they have to charge a little higher price for the same product. Or they can choose to actually buy products from local manufacturers and buy food from local farmers and local producers. And again, the cost of doing business with a mom and pop store is most likely going to be a little higher than a corporate store, but not necessarily so. We have a lot of good restaurants in my neck of the woods here. All of them mom and pop, no corporate outfits, not yet. We've managed to keep the corporate outfits out. But all the restaurants here are mom and pop restaurants. Most of them offer decent food, if not good food, some very good food, for a reasonable price. And sometimes when I travel to larger cities like St. Louis or Columbia or Jeff City, and I sit down and I order a hamburger from a corporate chain, I'm surprised that the price that they charge is actually higher than at our local mom and pops. And the product is not as good as our local family-owned restaurants here in Hickory County, Missouri. So sometimes when you shop at small places, small businesses, locally owned businesses, you may expect to pay a higher price just to pay the price of keeping these people strong, but not necessarily and not always. Sometimes you do find better bargains at the local family-owned businesses. And some of these businesses can be giving you a pretty good value. But even if you have to pay more to get the product you want, in my opinion, you're still getting a better value shopping at a locally owned mom-and-pop operation because you're keeping these people in business. You're keeping these vital blocks in place, these building blocks of our society. You're supporting your friends, local families, and you are being the job creator because if you shop at the local small business operations, you're going to be helping to keep them in business. If you quit shopping at these small retailers, these small little mom-and-pop stores, then you are going to be taking that business away and giving it to the bigger chains, and you're going to be saying, okay, I support the big chain, and I don't support the little guy. And in the end, you are going to be making the decision that these little guys are no longer going to be in business. See, we normally think of the big corporate entities, the 1%, as being the job creators, when in fact, it's the other way around. It's the consumer who is the job creator. And if we're perfectly okay spending our money at the big retail outlets and the big corporate giants, then we will be creating business for the corporate giants. But if we say to ourselves, I want to turn this ship around, I want to make a change, I want to support the little guy, and we start shopping small, we start shopping locally, and we start shopping with people who have business ethics and philosophies that we can endorse wholeheartedly 100%, then we're going to be creating these jobs that not only provide for our local friends and neighbors and families, but which also contribute to building a just world in which economic justice and social justice are not just things we talk about to impress people. They are realities that we are creating with each and every dollar that we spend. So in short, mindful consumerism is asking the questions, doing your research, and then asking yourself, is this a company that I keep? And if it is, shop there. But if after asking that question you find out this isn't a company that I would like to keep, if this company is not being environmentally friendly, if this company is not treating its workers well. If this company is paying the CEO $20 million a year and then asking its average employee to get by on maybe $15,000 a year or less, working part-time hours when they really want full-time employment, and denying them the overtime work that they may or may not be putting in, not giving them overtime pay for overtime hours worked, then you have to ask yourself the question, is that really a company that I want to keep? Do I want to support a world in which there is a vast economic divide between the very poor and the very rich? Or do I want to create a world in which all people have a fair shake? And if you do, then you have to go in to the stores around you, look at the products that you buy, do some reading. Are they made in environmentally friendly ways? Are they made by companies that just use the environment as a commodity for doing business? Are they taking things that should be the property of all, like clean drinking water? And are they bottling it and selling it for a dollar here, a dollar there? Are they in business to make a killing? Or are they in business to make the world a better place? And as for me, I want to create a world which is better than the world I was born into. Right now, the shifts that I've seen over the last 40 years, this world is not better than the one I was born into. It's worse. It's been slipping ever since the 1980s, and it continues to slip. And we have the power. Turn this around. If you too agree that the world that we see today is not as good as the world we were born into, if you want to make the decision to do what you can to make the world a better place, then practice mindfulness in your buying habits. And I'm going to reread this quote from Bernie Clark. Mindful buying, aware of the damage and suffering caused by unmindful consumption, I resolve to be aware of how what I purchase or consume affects people, animals, plants, and my environment. Ask the questions, open your eyes, and when you start to get answers that you don't agree with, answers that you do not like, answers that may curl your hair, then make the decision. Are you going to support this by literally buying into it? Or are you going to support an alternative by buying into something better and making the decision to decide for yourself, what are the things I really need as opposed to the things that I want? There is a difference between our needs and our greeds. We don't need to be buying fresh packs of candy or chewing gum every time we go to the store. We can cut back here and there. Instead of buying junk food, 9 times out of 10, we can choose to buy a good, wholesome, whole grain foods. We can buy fruits, vegetables, and take them home. Create at least one meal for ourselves at home rather than buying it out at the deli. You know, 3 meals a day. We can make a choice. But we have to ask ourselves hard-hitting questions. What do I really need to survive? What can I afford to sacrifice and easily afford to sacrifice? And can I actually live better by sacrificing a few of these things which are harmful to others and which are also harmful to me. I'm a recovering alcoholic, and I used to think, not too many years ago, that if I didn't have 12 beers a day, I couldn't survive. But I actually found out that, yes, you can live, and you can live far better by not having any beer, by giving up that addiction, by breaking that mindset. And it's not just the alcoholic or the drug addict who is addicted. We all have our addictions. We can be addicted to things like cheap oil, sensuality, power, control. We can be addicted to money and the accumulation of money and material resources. When we take a good look at the things around us, and we find that certain things do not contribute to our well-being, but actually contribute in some way to our overall self-destruction, and we can see that we are addicted. And addictive behavior is something that we feel like we have to engage in, even if it tears apart our family, even if it tears apart our community, and even if it tears apart our health and our own physical and mental well-being. And part of mindful consumption, being a mindful consumer, is learning to see those areas that we are addicted to, those addictions that we have, and taking the steps to overcome them and to live better. And we can do it. It's just a mindset. It's just a decision. I'm going to end the broadcast on that note. This is Frater Ralph signing off and encouraging you to engage in mindful consumption. Before you go out shopping, think twice. Do your research. Open your eyes and look around you. See the world as it is. Does it make you happy? If it doesn't, then know that you have the power to change it. And take those small steps. Begin to change. I'm going to play another song in closing by Celtic Reggae Revolution called Gandhi's Triumph. And I'll see you back Sunday morning for what's going to be my first worship service on the internet radio. So until then, God bless.